So welcome again. If you are just joining us, welcome to our second live call for our Chaos to Cooperation retreat. We're going to start our Q&A now. And like I said, I had a lot of questions that had come up about siblings. And I just want to talk about that a little bit to get started, because I know a lot of you guys are dealing with that. When we have sibling conflicts, usually, I mean, what do we want to do when we, and I talked about this on my, today earlier, we had a support call. So if you were on that, if you're part of my membership or in our series right now, I'm going to repeat some of that stuff now because I thought it was just so, so important. But when we have these sibling conflicts, what do? We usually hear our kids fighting or bickering, or we know that they're about to get aggressive. What's our first instinct? Usually to run in, tell them to stop. You know, we may try to play judge and jury, find out who started what, and figure out, you know, what we should do about it from there. But we go in with the intention to stop something, to fix something, to do something, or to settle an argument, or to convince them to play nicely, or to take the toy away and or send them to their rooms or separate them. Now, sometimes we have to come in with protective force and separate kids. I won't let you hit. I won't let you throw these things. We need to take a cooling off. You know, we need to take some time to cool off. Let's everybody go to a different room. We'll come back after lunch. Sometimes we need to do that, and we need to step in, and we need to, you know, they might not want to do that, but sometimes we have to just put our foot down in terms of this is where the limit is. We never have to do it forcefully or unkindly. We just hold that boundary, and we don't get offended. Usually we run in with our fear sensor alerted and the alarm center going off. We run in, what are you doing? Stop it right now. How many times do I have to tell you? All these kinds of things. So when we walk in with that very unconscious state, immediately we want to stop whatever it is. So we really have to, of course, take that teach tool and use it. We have to stop, take a breath, observe. But we have to know when to intervene. I think we often want to run in and tell them again, like, to stop. But we want to lead. We want our children to be able to acquire skills that will help them do this on their own. If we run in and tell them, now share, give that to your sister, I told you not to take, you know, run in with all of these directives, they don't really have any incentive, nor do they have the practice to actually solve things on their own. So you're going to have to keep running in time after time after time. Now, sometimes you have to intervene because there's an age or big age stage difference, and one child can't verbalize their needs, or they can't get out the fact that they're being that they're upset, that they're frustrated, that they're being hurt, whatever it is. So sometimes we do have to shadow children at that, you know, if you have smaller children. But for older children, we have to sort of know when to intervene. When is this bickering? And even if the bickering is getting to the level where it's not so healthy, maybe they're not speaking in ways that are so conscious and respectful. Maybe they are speaking in ways that aren't allowed in the house. But we have to know, do we need to run in and intervene? Is this a situation where I hear them, I can let them work it out, even if it's not resolved fully, and I can always go back and talk to them? So we have to get out of the knee-jerk habit of running in to intervene when it's not necessary, when we're taking away the opportunity for our children to actually work it out, to find out more about themselves, about each other, about how their temperaments can work together. And the second thing I want to talk about with siblings is not only when to intervene, but what reasons might we be missing? What are the reasons that are really driving this conflict? If we're having conflict that's ongoing, if you have older children, 7, 9, 11, 12, whatever they are, and they have this ongoing conflict, we have to look. We might think that there's nothing, that they have no reason, that they've been talked about, that they've been talked to about their behavior, or all of these things, and we think they have no reason. But here's the thing. Behavior is a communication. It's always saying something. Now, what are the reasons that siblings fight? They fight over things, property, toys. So sometimes they might have a need for ownership. We can recognize that need. It doesn't mean that the limits change, but we can go in and stop forcing kids to give up their property and maybe talk about the ownership that they were seeking. And then letting them know that you have the faith that they're going to work it out. Maybe you have to step in so that it doesn't escalate. Maybe you're going to step in so that the negativity doesn't escalate into actual physical aggression. But then once you do, once you step in and observe and say, hey, you guys sound like you're really having a big argument over here. I'm hearing some strong words. Do you, you know, maybe check in? Do you need some time to cool off? And then maybe they start going, you know, she took this or she came in my room and I'm trying to study and she's playing her music too loud or whatever it is. Okay, so it sounds like you're needing some more space or you're needing some more privacy or you would like to have some peace so that you can get your things done. Or maybe, you know, I hear often, you know, she just bothers him because he's bored. He bothers her because he's bored. She bothers him because he's bored. Well, boredom. Okay, so recognize that maybe the child needs stimulation. You're looking for somebody to play with. You're looking for something to do. Then here's where we don't want to just decide for our kids. If they're old enough, especially when they're old enough, we want to be able to then walk away sometimes. Now, not always. We may not always be able to leave the room, but once we're done validating whatever anger, frustration, or pain, once we acknowledge the child's need for them each without showing a preference for one child, without making one child the victim, one child the instigator, then we connect to problem solve. Now, here's the thing. You don't have to do the problem solving. You can just appreciate for them how difficult it is. Well, we've only got, you know, one radio here. God, do kids even use radios anymore? I'm showing my age. But, you know, one player to play the music on, and we've got two kids that want to listen to two different songs. I'm not really sure what to do, but I believe that you guys can work this out. And then walk away. Give them this, so you've validated their needs, you've acknowledged what's going on, and then you've said, you know what, I have the faith in you that you guys can do this. And then see what happens. It doesn't mean that they're always going to get it right, but just giving them that opportunity to have a say, to have choice, without you coming in and picking or telling who's right, what should be done, gives them so much more power and so much more practice to developing those skills that we want to see with them. And so when we get to that state, we connect to problem solve. Now, you don't have to problem solve for them necessarily. Just appreciate, show gratitude, and have faith. Show faith that you know that they're going to be able to work this out. Now, some kids, you might say, you know what, my kids aren't going to do that. They're just going to continue fighting, or they're just not going to do anything. They're not going to know what to say. Okay, so maybe you do offer suggestions. Maybe you stay with them and guide them through the process. If they're a little bit younger, like 5 and 6 and 7, have a listening station in your house. You need to have something set up where this is the peace table. That's what they did. I taught in a Montessori school for a while, and we had the peace table, and this is where kids came to work out conflict. It was a place where we listened to each other. It was a place where, and so you can have this in your home. You can have a table, a room, a set of chairs, some beanbags, make it comfy. It's not a punitive place. It's a place where we go to have some discussion. I have some things that I would like to share with you. All right, let's go to the listening table, the listening station, whatever you want to call it. Make up a fun name in your house. Have physical objects. And we talk, of course, about a lot of these ideas and different tools in my classes. We can't go into everything, but these are some really fast and easy things that you can implement in your home. A sensory box. I think I mentioned this on the last tool. Make sure everybody has some sort of basket, place in your home that has sensory tools, stress balls, Play-Doh, things that kids can go and grab when they're feeling frustrated. You know what? You can't hit, but you can go grab all this newspaper and squeeze it into a ball. Or the stress ball, or the Play-Doh, or the sandbox if it's outside and easy to access and you're in that kind of a environment that you can go outside at this time of the year. But back to the listening table or this place where we go to have peaceful conflict resolution, have a listening stone and a talking stick. These are simple objects that give kids something to hold. So when it's my turn to talk, I'm holding the talking stick. It can be a stick, a cuddly bear, it can be a feather, it can be a stone. In my house, we have a listening stone and a talking stick. So something that the child who's listening can hold, it keeps their focus. It gives them a cue that says, I know that it's my turn. So again, that's for, you know, maybe 5, 6, 7, 8, 9-year-olds. And for your older children, know when to intervene, know when to walk away, and after you're done validating, and know when to walk away and say, you guys can work this out. You might offer suggestions. You might say, you know what, you might want to try this, or when I've had this problem before, this is what worked for me. Sometimes you do have to decide. Maybe you have to decide, who is going to leave the room and your sister has her friends over. You need to find another space to play your drums so that they can have some quiet. Whatever the issue is, maybe you do have to decide, but then let that other child know, or let both children know. But you know what? This is something that I know that has come up before, so let's have a meeting. Get those family meetings happening, especially with your older children, times when children know that they can air their grievances, their needs that have gone unmet, their feelings, their hurts. It's a safe place. It's not a place where they're going to air how they felt, and you're going to say, well, you were being too sensitive. Well, he was just trying to help. It's not that sort of, don't, have a meeting place where you can come together that's a place of safety. So you could tell your kids, you know what, but let's talk about this at the family meeting, or let's talk about this after dinner so we can come up with some ideas that might work for everybody. That way your children don't feel like that's the end. They didn't have any say. They didn't get what they want. And then it becomes, well, she always gets what she wants. He always gets what he wants. Nobody ever pays attention to me. That's going back to those reasons. What might be really driving the conflict? Siblings can store. It's probably one of the most challenging relationships that we can have when we're having to be wonder about the affection of our parents. Because perhaps they're taking, and not intentionally that you're taking sides, but perhaps you have to pay attention to the 6-month-old and the 5.5-year-old has a little more ability to, wait. Not much, but sometimes they have more. So, but that child unintentionally may feel like your love for them is in jeopardy. And so that makes children very uncomfortable. They can hold on to these sorts of hurts with siblings for a long time. Your child may be kicking her sibling because she's really upset about last week about how he got to have more ice cream in his bowl. And no, it never came up. And it seems silly, of course, to us as adults. It's like, let it go already, right? But for kids, they don't have the same processing center that we do. It's very inefficient. It needs a lot more guidance. It needs a lot more recognition. So we really want to look at what, if you have conflict that's happening over and over, you really want to look at what reasons you might be missing that are driving the conflict. And unintentional, does someone feel less important? Is someone been labeled as the aggressor or the instigator? Is someone, because of their age or their stage or ability, is someone getting more attention? Maybe there's someone who's a really great gymnast or a really great sports person, and they're getting, the one kid gets a lot of awards or a lot of attention for their academic ability or whatever it is. That can cause some kids to feel jealous and not even know that it's jealousy, because jealousy is sort of a complex feeling that an 8-year-old or maybe even a 9-year-old may not recognize right away. All right, I think that's what I wanted to say on sibling conflicts. I hope that helps you guys, and certainly *6 to get in the Q&A queue, and then I will unmute you. So let's go right to that Q&A queue. And if you're all right, let's go to our callers. Hi there.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. Who's this?
Oh, great. This is actually Michelle. I just have my cell phone is still under my dad's last name.
Oh, okay. Hi, Michelle. How are
So
you?
funny. Hi, I'm good. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for calling in. What can I do? What can we help you with tonight?
So my question is, my children are, so they're young, they're 5 and 3, and then I'm expecting a new one at the end of the summer.
Oh,
and
congratulations.
thanks. And they're 2 boys, and I've like totally been working with this whole idea of like that my older son feels like when the baby came along, he was capable of more, and so he felt neglected. He felt like he wasn't getting as much attention for a few years now. So trying to give them special time. It's kind of hard to make it happen every day, but I try to incorporate that into our routine, that they each get 15 minutes of special time. And I started again tonight separating their bedtimes because it was just not working well. So like the younger one goes to bed first, and they each get like 30 minutes just by themselves.
Nice.
But sometimes, like this afternoon, my son came home from school. He gets a ride home from school, and his friend came in, and they were playing together, and his little brother wanted to be a part of it because he missed his older brother all day.
Sure.
And the older one didn't want him anywhere nearby, and so he was like, "You're wrecking everything. You're breaking down the house we're building." Like, you know. And so I go in and just said, "Oh, boys, you know, I see that we have a problem here. You know, I see that you both want the same toy and that, you know, we're having a hard time. So let's see what we can do." And my older son is really intense and, like, he's clever and he's on to me. And he's like, "She's trying to, you know, do something here." And so he kind of won't let me get a word in edgewise. He's like, "No, I don't want to hear what you have to say." And he won't let me try to do any kind of peaceful conflict negotiation. Like, he won't even let me get a word in.
Now, so here's what I want you to do when that happens. I want you to stop talking, and I want you to tell him, "Tell me more." Because at that point, he doesn't want you to talk because he can't take it in. He's too frustrated, so he can't hear your logical suggestions at this point. He's still in the emotional part of his brain. So that's why he's not telling you because he's on to you. He's telling you because he does know that you're going to give him information that he can't process. And that's going to frustrate him in that moment. So when you go in, now the three-year-old's only three, so you're sort of going to be, I don't want to say that you have to use, again, that sometimes you might have to use protective force or in terms of, or verbalizing for the three-year-old, but not even if they're really verbal, sometimes, you know, they get frustrated, they don't want to talk about things just like the five-year-old. But here is where you go in. Now if you have to separate, you separate them for, you know, protection of everybody. But did you go in and start with validating that the five-year-old had a really long day at school and he just wants some space to play with his friend? Now, I'm not saying you're going to give him all that space. Okay, and then what happens after you do that?
So that's when that's like the hard part to get out. Like, I'm trying to say to him, I'm saying, like, "Well, I was trying to acknowledge, like, just acknowledge, like, I can see that you really, you know, wanted to have time alone with your friend. I can see that. I can understand." And he's just like, and not letting me, you know.
Okay, so we don't even want to use words until he's calm.
Okay.
So at that point, I would invite him to sit on your lap, maybe go to another room if you want to have some, like, let him know that you see how upset he is. If you don't even have to do it in words, sometimes you can bend down and just say, "I want to hear what's going on." Or, "Tell me more." It's really quick and simple. "Tell me how much this is upsetting you." So that it's not about validating your maybe, because at 5 and a half, sometimes we don't need to name their emotions anymore because they've gotten a lot of that, especially if you've been doing this with your kids, like you said. By 5 and a half, he knows exactly what he's feeling, because my daughter did this. When she was past like 3-4 years old, she was like, "Stop telling me I'm angry." And I'm like, "Okay, it's just that, you know, we can move on from that. I don't need to say it out loud. I just need to be sometimes there with her until she calms, because you don't want to move into any peaceful conflict resolution until the children are calm. Now, your three-year-old might be calm, but if your five-year-old is really intense, he's going to get more overstimulated by you staying left brain logical. So what's going to help him move out of that? When he gets angry, we have to be an investigator. We have to start finding what calms him down. Is it, okay, I can see you're really angry, and you're going to start throwing that ball at him, or you're going to give him a tackle? Like, my kid's really physical, so she loves when I'll just tackle her. When she starts to get really uptight and aggressive, I'll just tackle her with kisses. Sometimes she'll push me away. Like, you have to be really responsive, receptive to your child's cues. Sometimes I'll know, okay, you know what, that wasn't the right, she doesn't want to make this a play giggly. She doesn't need to hug it out. She needs something else. So know your kid, know where, what they respond to. I used to play tug of war with her with a blanket, so when she was really mad, before we got to that peaceful conflict resolution stuff, I would give her the sensory stimulation so that her internally she could shut off the stress response, and then her thinking brain, so then his thinking brain will come back on.
Okay.
Does that help?
Yeah, that sounds really helpful, because that's what it is. It's like, he's so intense that I can't even, and he's very verbal and he's very intelligent, but like, he's just
not at that moment, probably.
Yeah, right. He won't let me even, like, talk to him. And then I'm like, "What is it? Why is this not working? I'm trying to do exactly what, you know, you say." So
you're just going
so
too fast.
I'll try that.
So just stay in the silence. Just stay in And he might not, sometimes we overtalk. Sometimes we want to talk, like say too many words. And I know that sometimes when I provide like examples, I'll give lots of words, but it's because I want to give you guys starter ideas. It doesn't mean that we have to say everything always too. So just if he doesn't respond to your voice, do connect physically or nonverbally with him until he's calm. When he's calm, he'll be able to hear you say you were really angry when your brother kicked your toy. You just wanted some space. You know, he'll be receptive to you saying that once he's out of that. Because right now it sounds like he's freezing up. He's afraid of what might happen next. Perhaps that, you know, that he has to let his brother play. You know, for him, there's all kinds of ideas. All he knows is there's an obstacle. It's frustrating because he's only 5 and a half. Sort of one of those developmental stages where they can be a little more rigid and inflexible. Their brain is doing a really big upgrade. He's just starting to have those connections to that thinking part of the brain, the cerebral cortex, the prefrontal cortex. That's where impulse control, self-regulation, consideration, thoughtfulness, planning. That's why kids can't, you know, we say this is the consequence, and if you do it, and then 2 minutes later they're doing it, even though they just said, I know I won't do it. It's their brain doesn't connect. It's not making those connections to stop their impulses and be thoughtful. It's very unreliable. So that's why it takes so much of our emotional tolerance.
Okay. That's great. That's really helpful.
Okay, good. I'm glad. So you can kind of get an idea of what is appropriate for your child and what is, is this within the normal developmental stage or is there an extra stressor? My child maybe should be beyond this. Because remember, guys, chronological age is not necessarily their emotional age. Lots of kids have all kinds of experiences, all kinds of traumas. We all do. We have big traumas that happen in our lives, and we have smaller everyday traumas. But when there's a lot of chronic stress, that can build up to the experience of trauma for a child, and that interrupts their ability to regulate their systems, which, of course, will affect their behaviors and affect their ability to calm down, to stop their impulses, even if they're a little bit older. So we have to look into our child's world and really know, okay, what's the background here? What has our relationship been like? So where is my child emotionally? If they've been given a lot of punitive discipline, they may have stopped making decisions. They sort of give up sometimes because they're always told what to do, or they come to see themselves as, I have a talked to a 7-year-old recently who said, you don't know what it's like to be punished every single day of your life. And this is a kid who kind of, has, and it's very little punishments. It's like, go sit on the stairs for, 2 minutes, or go, you have to sit here with me. It's like, you're no dessert. It's little stuff that's taken away. But to a kid, it builds up and it creates a feeling of helplessness and hopelessness, which eventually leads to those coping mechanisms that aren't so healthy. Things like, obviously when we get older, there's all kinds of dangerous things, sex, drugs, but there's things that aren't even as dangerous, maybe dangerous financially, shopping, or things that are dangerous to your health, like overeating. And there's so many things that can lead us to fill that hole. So know that our kids are responding emotionally to the world. That's what we do. That's what humans do. We're social, emotional creatures. And our learning has to take place in the context of social, emotional relationships that are safe if we want the brain to grow in the right way. All right, let's take some callers because you guys are getting back in the line. So area code 954, I'm going to unmute you. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi, Lori. This is Susan.
Hi, Susan.
Different Susan than the one you were just talking about.
Did you email your question, too? Because I have another Susan question.
No, there must be another Susan.
I
don't meet too many Susans, but...
Isn't that funny? It's I have at least three of you guys on this call. Or not on the call, but in the retreat group, so that's funny. Well, what is your question, Susan?
My question is, I have two little girls, but the question is mostly regarding my 5-year-old. She just turned 5 end of December.
Okay.
And she has a little bit more of a, I don't know if you describe it as like an aggressive personality. Like, when she gets angry, she's a little loud. When she's playing with her toys and she gets frustrated, she throws them. And I try to say, yeah, I know you're frustrated, but I can't let you throw toys. Someone can get hurt. And she doesn't seem to stop. And I know I've heard the thing about, you know, the stress balls and, oh, you can stomp your feet or different things you can do when you're angry. I just can't seem to get her to do them. Or she doesn't, or she's not interested in doing them.
When
I
did
guess
you
at that moment, end of December.
Okay, so go ahead. I'll let you finish your question, and then I'll jump in there for you.
I guess the main question is how to handle it when she gets angry. Because she shows her anger in a strong way,
mm-hmm.
whether it's the throwing of the toys or sometimes she'll, like, yell. She'll be like, get away from me, or, you know, she's strong when she gets angry, and I'm wondering what's the best way to handle that.
What's your reaction? What's your reaction to her anger? Because the best way to handle it is just to remain calm. Not,
right.
You know, create the boundary, set the limit, but set it, you know, stay emotional. Sometimes we sort of set the limit and we try to, we back off. I know you're angry, but you can't hit. And we sort of take that tone. I'm not saying get all sweet and la-la with her, but you want to remain open. You want to let her know that you're a safe channel. And sometimes our tone tells kids that we are not a safe channel, that we are, you know, we might be setting the limit, but we're upset with them and they better know it kind of thing. And that will create more negative tension. Not saying you do that. I'm just giving that as one example. The next thing is recognizing, one, that developmentally this will take some time to get through because she just turned 5, so she still doesn't have access to the self-regulation part. Is she requires someone else to do that with her more often than not. Some kids have a little bit longer of a curve. I would look, again, always look to where might other stressors be coming from? But in the moment, it's really just how calm can I stay and what's triggering me? Why am I getting triggered? Or because are you getting triggered? Are you able to calm? Are you worried that maybe she's just not moving through the stage fast enough, but you're able to stay calm? Or are you getting triggered in these moments?
For the most part, I would say not necessarily so triggered. It's like that idea that the aggression, like, it makes you uncomfortable. As it does, I think, any parent, when you see your kid get angry and show aggression, it automatically triggers this feeling of, like, concern. Am I going to have an aggressive child?
Yeah,
you
definitely.
Know?
Definitely.
That's
think.
To show aggression. But like you said, developmentally, it's that, and I guess, you know, why, you know, the throwing of the toys, and she'll still continue to do it, even though I say, you know, someone's going to get hurt, or her sister just got hurt.
And
it's just like
where
that repetitive.
You have to.
Like, am I missing, not setting that boundary enough? Or is that just, I just have to keep, it's just repetition.
It is repetition, but we always want to intervene, we want to try to intervene before our children get to the explosive state. Now, some kid, like my daughter, she had 2 volumes, scream and happy. She didn't have the in-between. So I know what you mean if your kid's one of those that turns on, like, the second, or was it the caller before that had that kid? My kid did
yeah,
that.
Yeah, she could be a little bit like that.
So sometimes kids are like that. But here's the thing. Aggression is a survival instinct. And we are born with that part of the brain fully formed, our survival instinct, fight or flight. So she goes to those tools because those are the most primitive tools and the fastest tools and the easiest tools that she has access to. So she's not choosing to be aggressive. A lot of times we think, well, my child looked right at me and I said, don't you dare throw that. And they threw it. They knew exactly what they were doing. She looked at me. She was calm. She wasn't freaking out, you know, and we think all of these things. We project onto our children these adult perspectives. But in that moment, when that child is throwing something, they are in an emotional state. They're having an emotional experience. Their limbic system and their brainstem is what have taken over, and not the prefrontal cortex where planning is, you know, talking, verbalizing our emotions, thinking, reflecting on our emotions, stopping our impulses. None of that is online when your children are in that state. So, of course, if you can, start to recognize their anger when you can. Recognize this, just like we want to investigate our own anger. What happens to me when I start to get overstimulated in my stress response? Do my cheeks get flushed? Does my heart start to pound? What happens to your child? Do you see them start to tense up? So then you can go in and say, you know what, I see that you're squeezing your fist really tight, and I'm thinking that you're about to get really angry, so I wanted to come in and help. When you approach with curiosity and the offer to help, now, sometimes say you don't have that chance and you're intervening later. Again,
yeah,
it's
that's usually how it is. Like, I may be doing something and they're just, like, playing, and then it'll happen in those moments when I'm not standing next to her.
Sure. Did you come on late to the call, or did you catch it from the beginning?
I came on, like, 4 minutes after, four or five minutes.
So I would re-listen to some of that stuff that I talked about siblings in the beginning if you need to, because sometimes it happens, so, you know, you hear it so fast, you don't really get it. But I talked really specifically about how to go in and handle some of those conflicts for kids. But as far as the aggression, you want, when she's not in that moment, when you're not in the moment of conflict, you want to look at what's really stressing her out. Again, play is a great way to find out, especially with a little kid who's just turned 5. You might get some really great information if you approach it through play, set up scenarios where you can sort of investigate, where you're not asking your child, but you're asking the puppet that she's holding, or the dolly that she's holding, or whatever it is. There are the Legos for your boys, or their, you know, Transformer Men, whatever kids are playing with today, whatever your kid's favorite thing is. Play is really a great way to get these answers. But know that aggression is her survival brain taking over, and that's very much what she has access to at this age. Her higher thinking brain will start to come online, start to, at around, now that, again, we see our 3-year-olds, or they can be really confident, they can be really verbal, they can stop their impulses sometimes, but that's the part of childhood. It's really inefficient. The brain function, I mean, the prefrontal cortex continues to develop until past their early 20s. And now they say that our brains can continue to change. So even if you have older kids, know that they're not stuck in these patterns. They may be patterns that need a little more mindful attention and lots more repetition, or maybe some repair. But these patterns can change even for older kids who maybe are sort of stuck in more rigid patterns. But really, for this aggression stuff, it's developmental for you right now. I really don't think that you're look at extra stressors, just like the other Susan that I was talking about with her 5-year-old. Look into the environment where she might be stressing out. Keep a track of her triggers. You may see a pattern. I had one client who realized her daughter's, I think it was her daughter's, but the aggression was coming from a lack of protein, that they weren't getting the right, you know, enough protein to make the, because you don't have that protein, your brain will be really sluggish, and it will affect your ability to behave, to listen, to pay attention, all of those things which are really limited in those little kids now. But without that right nutrition and food for them, it can really mess with them. So she realized the hard-boiled egg was the solution to a lot of the aggression that her child was experiencing. So start tracking when you see these explosions. Again, sometimes it's sibling stuff, like we talked about earlier, and they may be holding.
Yeah.
But start investigating her day, her friends, her world, and see where these little explosions come up, and see if you can pinpoint it to something.
Sometimes it is like her toy is not doing what she wants it to do.
Yeah.
You know, it won't stay on the horse, or, you know, it's little things like that, and then she'll, like, get all upset and start throwing things, and, you know.
And what I wanted to mention about the throwing, you go in and stop her. If you said you can't throw things, but she's still got it in her hand, you want to go. You don't want to challenge a small child not to do what you don't want them to do, especially when it's safety, because at that point they're telling you, I don't have any impulse control. If I'm about to throw something, fear sometimes, yeah, is going to work. You can go in, and if it's really dangerous and you need to yell to get their attention, sometimes that's what we need to do. But the follow-up shouldn't be done with the fear. We really should go in and step in and simply stop. And sometimes we also mess up with our kids because we validate them I might have talked about this on the last call, but it's so, so important. We might validate everything, and then we go, I know you're feeling frustrated, but you can't hit. But you can't. And with that but, we negate everything that we just said. It's not that I don't want you to set the limit, but once you set it once, kids know. Kids know that they're not supposed to hit. When they get to that place, after they've been able to calm, and if they're not calm, they're not listening to you anyway. We don't want to make them, we want to really focus on the emotional part. The behavior is something that we can always come back to, but the most important empathy and the attention to our children's emotional world must always precede the advice. And that's actually a direct quote from, almost a direct quote anyway, from Dr. John Gottman, who wrote Raising an Emotionally Intelligent Child. He says, empathy must precede advice. And that's how you will get that influence, and that's how your children will wire up the brain cells in the right way, the pathways to respect, to consideration, to impulse control, all of those things that we want them to have. All right, you guys, have a wonderful night. Thank you so much for joining me.